Shalom, Chaverim. My friends, in my last message, I convinced you, I hope, of the great importance of accent as a revealer of meaning. In human affairs, accent, cadence, and tonal pauses are important. A wrong emphasis or a misplaced pause can distort utterly the meaning of a whole sentence. You wish to send your train of thought on a meaningful journey. It leaves the terminal of your mind, and its intended destination is perfect understanding in the heart of your friend. Now, however well your train of thought may be provided with good seating accommodation for your selected words, it nevertheless runs an uncertain journey through the dark valleys of obscurity, unless equipped with the illumination of your well-placed emphasis. Let me illustrate this. Do you remember King Charles' head? You know it was said that King Charles walked and talked half an hour after his head was cut off. Sounds fantastic? Oh, sorry, I missed both pause and emphasis. Let's try again. King Charles walked and talked half an hour after his head was cut off. See what I mean? Accent and pause makes all the difference. With this vital clue as our guide, let us seek for and discover the divine accent, the emphasis that God uses and that He wants us to recognize, and that will enlighten us in understanding the divine revelation. A quest for the divine emphasis. Sounds promising, doesn't it? Where shall we begin to search for it? Why, where else but in the Bible? Of this divine book, Cooper's words may have full application. 'Tis revelation satisfies all doubts, explains all mysteries except her own, and so illuminates the path of life that fools discover it and stray no more. The first book of the Bible has been well described as the dawn of revelation. Over the uneasy and formless darkness of human conjectures, gropings, stumblings, perplexities, worries and concerns, over the discordant cacophony of human opinions, over the awful interrogation mark that seems to wind itself like some huge and crushing serpent around every human life, comes the first ray of the revealing light of the eternal God Himself. Breshit bara Elohim. In the beginning, God created. Infidelity may prefer to companion itself with the fleeing shadows of darkness, but faith faces the lucent beam and advances confidently into its fullness. Consonant with our quest, let us discover where, in that dawn, the first beam of divine light strikes. Or, to return to our metaphor, on what feature will the eternal God choose to place His authoritative accent? Where will the enlightening emphasis fall? Let me remind you right here of the opportunities presented to the divine mind to impress upon us the superlative wonders of creation. Think for a moment of all the amazing material available to the creating Godhead. Here, if anywhere, is fair season for the deity to invite us all to participate in an exhaustive and authoritative exposition upon the marvels of creation. Indeed, if the Creator felt so inclined, the whole 50 chapters of this book of beginnings, Genesis, could be devoted solely to any one of those vast and important themes that correctly and laudably capture human attention. Why, as you know, our universities, colleges, and halls of learning are replete with the erudite tomes of those who have spent a lifetime prosecuting their investigational inquiry into such subjects as biology, zoology, geology, anthropology, paleontology, psychology, astronomy, botany, in fact, every kind of ology or onomy the imagination could possibly conjure. In his divine revelation to all mankind, does the eternal God place his emphasis on the ologies and the onomies? Shouldn't we rather expect him to do so? If he doesn't, why doesn't he? Where then does he place his major accent? And how may we find it? Well, in our search to discover the divine accent, let us pursue the wise method of capturing, first, a bird's-eye view of the whole 50 chapters of the first book of the Bible. This is how we'll do it. Just run your eye along the nearest straight edge of your table. Now imagine that same table edge being divided exactly into 50 equal sections, and each of the 50 sections representing a corresponding to one of the 50 chapters of Genesis. Now, with that same imagination's eye, mark off mentally a small strip of only 11 of those 50 sections. This small area is simply packed with sweeping events grouped into three general periods. These periods are shown on a chart which will accompany the printed transcript of this message when you apply for it. Let us label this first small strip Primeval History. Now, you still have 39 sections of your table edge left. This is much the larger strip, and it represents the section of Genesis extending from chapter 11, verse 10, right to the end of the book at chapter 50. And it is filled not with sweeping events like the first section, but with the record of four significant entities: Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Now, had you noticed that before? Let us label this much larger section Patriarchal History. Isn't it remarkable that the whole of primeval history is relegated into a mere 11 sections of that chapter distance, whilst the patriarchal history of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph absorbs the whole of the remaining 39 sections? But that is not all. Relating biblical chronology to the creation of man, which, by the way, we shall designate Anohomenes chronology, and for which we employ the symbol AH, we make the interesting discovery that the smaller area of only 11 sections encloses the comparatively enormous time span of 2,083 years AH, whilst the much larger area of 39 sections relate to a mere 286 years AH. These unusual and revealing findings are worth summarizing, aren't they? Creation and all its pertinent ologies are allotted only 1/50th of chapter space. 2,083 years AH of primeval history are sweepingly relegated to a mere 1/5th of chapter space, but 39/50ths of chapter space are allotted to a period of only 286 years AH, covering the lives of only four men. Unleash your imagination, I beg of you. Capture the situation, if you can. Behold the cosmos. Survey the mighty creation of God, the worlds, the winds, the heavens, the heights, the forces, the powers, the elements. Now, look at Abraham. Surely by comparison, incomparable. One little inconsequential speck of humanity. Call to his side the reinforcements, if you will, of Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, and you have not really changed the picture. On the one hand, the vastness of all creation. On the other, four minute specks of some of its component dust. Compare this, which refuses comparison, and whereby every human assessment must the accent fall. Unit or universe, speck or spectacle, dust or dimension. Yet where does God place the accent of his divine revelation to man? My friends, on something other than all or any of the ologies. The divine accent is not on creation and its inexhaustible wonders. I repeat, the divine accent is on none of these, but rather on four specks of humanity. Not on the fathomless superlatives of creation, but on four super-significant Lilliputians. How wise we will be if our accent of interest and wisdom corresponds to the divine pattern. How foolish to ignore it. We have discovered the divine accent. And what an unexpected and amazing discovery it is. What do you make of it? Yivarecha Adonai v'yishmerecha. Ya'er Adonai p'navelecha v'hunecha. Yisar Adonai p'navelecha v'yasem lecha shalom. The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. Amen.